The only Sunday school class I remember is the one my father taught. When I was a very young child, I have this vague impression that the Sunday school was maybe a room with carpet and a whole lot of toys. But when we got old enough for the big kids class, we got to sit in folding chairs around a white table. We read from Bibles. We used pens and pencils instead of crayons. My father was serious, and so we all paid attention. When class was over, we ran outside to bright green grass. We drank lemonade from little paper cups. Sometimes we spent a few moments standing quietly by the memorial for the young man who had been a member of the congregation, who had died of head injuries sustained while surfing. Sometimes we stuck our heads into the dark paneled library to see if there were any new books or old beloved books that we might be able to take home with us for the week. This was church to me. Not theology, not politics, not even Bible stories, although I am sure they were told. Church was my parents teaching Sunday school and making sure that my brother and I behaved during worship and showing yet again in this way that they loved us and wanted us to know what was important to them. I cannot say enough good things about Sunday school teachers and about parents who bring their kids to church. This morning I've asked someone who fits both of those categories to speak about why he is involved in teaching Sunday school. He's one among many that I could have chosen that is a great example of the committed and generous people who are giving of their time and their energy and their talent to make faith real and alive for the youngest members of our church. And so Andy Wilde is going to come forward, and we're going to give him the one with the batteries that work. And yeah, excellent. Thank you.
You're pleased to know that I gave this talk during the first service, and Pastor April did her quality assurance check and invited me back in between the services to talk to you again. So, and it was very interesting this week. We've been, I came to work on Monday morning, and I got the email. And it's an email that, you know, I think everybody at one point or another has involvement in some ministry, and it was the email from Pastor April saying, "Wouldn't you mind spending a few moments talking about your experience as a Sunday school teacher?" And in fact, her words were, I think, to speak briefly about it. And my first thought was, yes, this is going to be very brief, because I'm not sure exactly what I'm going to say. And, Mabel and I, my wife Mabel in the back, normally attend the first service, so most of you here probably don't necessarily interact with me too much, but I'm the CEO of a submarine down on the submarine base, and we had a very busy week getting ready for underway, which I got back from yesterday morning. And my first thought is, my goodness, I've got to put some remarks together, and where am I going to find the time? I don't know what I'm going to say. So my immediate thought was, well, I'll find my executive officer and have him throw a few words together for me, and it'll be no problem. I immediately realized that wasn't going to work, so my next strategy was to ignore the email. Maybe when it came to work the next day, it wouldn't be there in my inbox. But that also didn't work. So then I went to the next strategy, which was, maybe if I just sleep on this for a few nights, I will be inspired to say something. And sure enough, by the time I woke up this morning at about 5 o'clock in the morning, I knew exactly what it was that I was going to say. So here it goes. My first impression was, as I went down this journey, most of it subconscious during the week, of figuring out what it was that I was going to say, and it's going to be a little bit off message because most of what I have to say has nothing to do with Sunday school at all, is what a great leader Pastor April is for all of us here, because it is her job for us to discover our faith and discover our relationship with God and Jesus. And in a one-line email in which she asked me to put together a few words about Sunday school, got me to spend the entire week reflecting on my experience with God and Jesus and church and all those things that we wrestle with so frequently but probably don't spend as much time as we would like to taking care of in our own lives. But it really got me to thinking, because I grew up in the Episcopal Church. And I have always had very fond memories, and I'm, you know, most people would call me a relatively conservative person, so my memories were all very fond of very structured church-going experience. And I still enjoy that type of experience sometimes. But my parents, unfortunately, divorced when I was around 12, and I was never confirmed in the church, and really stopped going to church at that point in my life. And I didn't really start thinking about church again until I got to college. And I thought, well, you know, I was never confirmed. It's a little, you know, it's something I'd like to start discovering again. So I went to Northwestern University. And to anyone who's been here, they have a beautiful Episcopal cathedral there. Very grandiose, very good looking, which is very typically Episcopalian, because you usually have a lot of money to throw at problems like that. I went to see the priest there, and he explained to my dilemma that I wanted to be confirmed. And he said, okay, well, here, read the stack of books and come back and talk to me. So I started reading, and the next day I got a phone call from my mom saying, why is this priest calling and asking me for money? So I explained the whole thing to her, and I really didn't kind of get off the ground my discovery of, you know, where I wanted to be with faith and where I was going with my religious experience. I really didn't start going to church again. Years later, I met my lovely bride, Mabel, and we decided to marry after we dated for only about three and a half years, I think. I finally figured out that she was the woman for me after she stuck around for that long. And by chance, and in the Navy, you know, they have many different denominations of pastors and priests or Navy chaplains, and ours happened to be a Methodist priest. And we were married by Chaplain Travis Phillips on September 8th of 1996, 10 years ago right now, if you'll do the math. And we started saying to ourselves, because remember, we had promised Chaplain Phillips that we needed to start going to church, so we started talking about it, but never really got off the ground until we got to Kings Bay, Georgia. And I don't know if you've ever been to southeastern Georgia, but southeastern Georgia, I like to refer to it as hundreds of years of rich history completely unimpeded by progress. And what we found there, we went to the Navy's chapel there, and the Navy chapel, they had several different denominations of Protestant pastors, chaplains, and they really were required to give them all equal time. And my most interesting memory was they had to give one Sunday a month to the Southern Baptist guy. And the only thing I remember about his message was, if you don't go recruit your neighbor for our church, you're going to go to hell. And I don't know if there's more to it than that, but that was the one that struck me a lot. And it really didn't wasn't what I was looking for either. So we went for quite a long time without going to church, and I was subsequently sent over to the Middle East without Mabel and the kids for a year and a half. And this is where, and I didn't get into this so much in the last service, but I really look as kind of a divine intervention that has us here in Pacific Beach, United Methodist Church today, because I was very hot over in Bahrain, and Mabel was very, very hot in eastern North Carolina. And we just decided we wanted to go someplace where the weather was nice, so we'll go to San Diego. So I called the Navy housing office, and I said, we're going to San Diego. And they said, we're sorry, the waiting list is 2.5 years for housing, and you'll never get in. And they called me back the week later, and they said, well, what we really meant was, we've got houses available for you, and you have to move in by next week. And I said, well, where do you have housing? They said, Santee, Miramar, and Pacific Beach. And I said, I don't know. Pick for me and let me know what you find out. And they picked a house right over here in Navy Housing in Pacific Beach. So I dragged Mabel and the kids out here. And they moved in February. And in March, I went away to school for 3 months, Navy school for 3 months. And about halfway through, Mabel called me up and said, hey, I've been looking for churches. And there's one right around the corner called Pacific Beach United Methodist Church. And I like it. And being a well-trained husband and father, I said, well, by golly, honey, I like it too. So we obviously started going here, and we became members shortly after we arrived. I remember Pastor April asking us if we'd like to become members. And, the thing that struck me, and I'm, all about, taking my commitment seriously, and as we're reading what our commitment to the church was, it was to support the church. And just in case you don't remember, I've got it all written down here. With your presence, prayers, gifts, and service. And the church, Pastor April and all of our friends here, always remind us that the presence is important because we're not here. They call and ask us about it. And well, we have been taking the opportunity to commune with the Lord in places like Yosemite National Park, and I was, of course, at sea last week in a very small boat, thanking God that his presence was with me at sea, as I do whenever I'm at sea. But the service part of it was very important, too. And Mabel and I, you know, wrestled a little bit with how it is that we're going to serve the church. Our children were relatively young, 2 and 4 at that time. Mabel, you know, had kind of pushed me towards the choir for a while, though I didn't really recognize how my singing voice would translate to service to our Lord. But we decided to settle on Sunday school. And we started that that ministry. And it's been very rewarding. I mean, I really, we've enjoyed it quite a bit. And I haven't, you know, I've spent my entire life training adults on how to do things. That's one of the most important things I do in the Navy. But I really didn't have, and Malaya will probably attest to this, you know, my questions are always, well, how do you teach kids? You know, there's got to be a process or a procedure for it that I can follow in order to train kids how to, you know, have faith in the Lord. But it turns out that it's really a path of discovery for me, and it's really been a wonderful experience. I'll tell you, I have no shortages of stories about our experience with our kids after having gone to Sunday school for so long as to how, you know, Elizabeth, and I'll give you a story that really represents this well, in public school where, you know, you will not talk about God. It's not authorized. And she's in, I think it was first grade, and the teacher is asking, well, what do you think about Easter? Because Easter was coming up, and kids were talking about the Easter bunny and chocolate eggs and all these things. And Elizabeth, according to her teacher, is just sitting over there getting a little exasperated. Of course, she raised her hands, and she says, it's when Jesus rose from the dead. As if you kids don't get it. What are you thinking? And we just have no shortage of stories like that that really affirm our you know, our understanding that our kids are coming along with an understanding of faith in God that is very important to us. And I also, you know, as we go down this path, and this path of discovery that I've taken, you know, I was thinking about how wonderful it is to be part of this church and part of this congregation. I know we hear about it all the time, and we all talk about how wonderful a congregation it is. And I was very, you know, as a conservative Episcopalian, I was a little bit you know, concerned about making this huge leap into this congregation. But the simple fact is that I couldn't be happier anywhere else right now. And I was just talking as I was underway. This past week I mentioned to Pastor April, we had a Navy chaplain underway, Charles Wilson, a wonderful man, Pentecostal chaplain. But we got into a discussion about, you know, all of the problems that many of the Protestant churches are having these days. And we really came to the conclusion is because they're just not very inclusive. And through conservatism and political views or what have you, you know, there are big divisions and big rifts coming in many of these churches. And I personally don't see that in the Methodist Church and certainly not here. And I just really got to thinking how much I thank God as I look back into the Episcopal Church that I'm in a very inclusive church and not one, you know, for example, that, you know, that is tearing itself apart from the inside. For the reason that the church leadership has decided to consider the heinous act, and I say that with the utmost of sarcasm, of course, the heinous act of ordaining an openly homosexual bishop. And I couldn't imagine being part of a conflict within a church that was about being exclusive vice being inclusive. And I just really thank God every day that I'm here in a very inclusive family of this church, and I thank you very much.
You can see what a wonderful, from this example, what a wonderful group of Sunday school teachers we have. And I think Andy's doing a lot better job taking this in stride than I am, but he was on the final voyage with his ship, the Dolphin, yesterday. It's going to be decommissioned, which was really a terrible shock since the Navy spent $50 million fixing it and then putting Andy in charge of it only a few months ago to discover that now it's over, but we, through a lot of prayer, we're thinking it's starting to look like Andy and Mabel and the kids are going to be able to stay in San Diego for their next assignment as well. So be thanking God for that. Besides this naval officer, our group of Sunday school teachers include a scientist, a social worker, a mechanic, a writer, a former real estate agent, several healthcare professionals, at least two accountants, a preschool teacher, and then some whose work really can't be summed up or described in just a title or a word. All of them juggle work, school, family, relationship, household, and volunteer responsibilities. Some have faced medical challenges during this past year. One of them even had both of her knees replaced, although I am here to assure you it was not because of anything that happened in Sunday school. Some have changed jobs or gotten married. They vary in age by probably as much as 3 decades. What they all have in common is faith and a commitment to children. Each of them, when asked to take part in our church's Sunday morning ministry with children, said yes. And I'm very proud of them and very grateful to them. I also happen to think that they're very, very lucky. I loved teaching children Sunday school, and I did it routinely back in the day when I only preached every other Sunday. I miss it. To me, teaching children Sunday school is the most fun and rewarding opportunity available to people who want to be involved in the life of their church. So I really don't have any hesitation about inviting you, members and friends of the church, to join the teaching team. I think it's one of the greatest opportunities you will ever have to make a positive difference in someone's life. So if you think that you might be a willing candidate, I'd like to invite you to talk to Malia Sandstrom, our Sunday school coordinator for the children's program, or to me. You could talk to us in person, call us, or send us an email, because we would like to talk to you about whether and how you might fit into our Sunday school program. Teachers work in teams with another adult, and each team's turn comes up only once a month and only for one of the 2 services on any given Sunday. Curriculum, training, supplies, support are all provided. Of course, safety of the children and safety of the teachers is one of our highest priorities. Our paid staff have all had background checks, and we do expect that within a few months we'll be set up so that all of our workers with children, both paid and volunteer, can participate in the live scan fingerprint process, which we feel is an important way to assure protection of everyone involved in this ministry. Children are a precious gift from God to all of us, not just to their parents, and helping them grow up in faith is a great privilege and a great joy. To hear now from another teacher, I'd like to turn to the book of Proverbs in the Bible. I'm going to read from chapter 22, beginning with verse 17. Incline your ear and hear my words, and apply your mind to my teaching. For it will be pleasant if you keep them within you, if all of them are ready on your lips, so that your trust may be in the Lord. I have made them known to you today, yes, to you. Have I not written for you 30 sayings of admonition and knowledge, to show you what is right and true? Do not rob the poor because they are poor, or crush the afflicted at the gate. For the Lord pleads their cause and will despoil the life of those who despoil them. Make no friends with those given to anger, and do not associate with hotheads, or you may learn their ways and entangle yourself in a snare. Do not be one of those who gives a pledge and becomes a surety for debt. If you have nothing with which to pay, why should your bed be taken out from under you? Do not remove the ancient landmark that your ancestors set up. Do you see those who are skillful in their work? They will serve kings. One of the things that strikes me about this teacher is the confidence with which he or she speaks. This teacher has some advice to pass on and has written it out so that there can be no misunderstanding. The teacher is clear that it's going to benefit the listener tremendously to follow the advice. The teacher wants the student to live a good and upright life and not create a tangled mess, and so the teacher passes on important pieces of wisdom gained from life experience. Don't cheat the poor. Don't make life worse for those who suffer. The Lord is their defender, and you don't want to be an opponent of God. Be careful who you choose as friends. Avoid getting into debt. Don't try to cheat by moving the property line. Those property lines are a symbol not just of integrity, but of faith. Our ancestors put them there. Learn and practice your craft well, whatever it is. Learn and practice it well, and you will receive recognition. Sounds like it could be a letter written to a young person, young adult, starting out, going off to college, or starting a first job or career. And for all we know, it may well have been. The inspiring thing is that not only is the advice given still good advice today, the teacher is also not shy about saying, there's a difference between right and wrong, and you're going to have a much happier life if you do what's right. Sometimes I think that we adults become uncertain about whether, in fact, we have anything to teach the next generation. The pace of change is so fast, it almost seems like children today are living in a different world than the one we grew up in. But this text suggests that we might examine that attitude again. When this part of the Bible was written, the elder generation did not hesitate to give moral advice, moral guidance to the next generation. Maybe it's important for us to still claim that role so that we don't leave those that come after us without a rudder. A dad by the name of Scott Jones describes how this lesson was brought home to him. When his son was a high school freshman, the boy accused Scott of being the meanest dad in the whole county. Why? Because the parents had a curfew, by which time they expected their son to be home. The parents insisted on knowing where he was and who he was with all the time. They expected him to be at the family dinner table every evening, and they expected him to do his share of the household chores. They even limited the amount of television that he could watch. Mean, mean, mean. But then one day, one of the boy's more undisciplined friends said to this high school freshman, his peer said, I wish my parents loved me enough to make me come home on time. That was the day Scott Jones became especially proud of being the meanest dad in Denton County. Children and teens need us to give them guidance. They need us to set the limits and point out the pitfalls to send them off in the right direction. They might not always listen to what we have to say. I think I can hear a slight bit of irritation creeping into the voice even of the biblical writer who said, did I not write down 30 sayings so that you could know the difference between right and wrong? They may not always listen, but a lot of times the truth is they do listen, especially if our actions match our words and we model what we teach. Retired Bishop Leontine Kelly remembers a woman who put the fear of God into her as a child. Leontine belonged to a family famous for its hospitality. So if the doorbell rang, she knew the assignment was quick run and answer the door. So one day a knock came, and Leontine, being the closest, ran to open it. A woman she had never seen before stood there on the front step, erect, dignified, bristling with energy, and dressed in black from head to toe. What do you plan to be, young lady? This visitor asked Leontine without even saying hello. Leontine was stunned into silence, speechlessness. What did she plan to be? She didn't know. You must plan to be somebody, said the visitor, who then introduced herself as Dr. Mary McLeod Bethune of Bethune-Cookman College. Leontine never, ever forgot that visitor or her strong advice. The question and the words and the image of that visitor stayed with Leontine, challenging her to think, to plan, and to become somebody who could make a contribution to the world. We have something wonderful to pass on to the next generation. We have the Word of Life. We don't have to know everything there is to know in order to be effective teachers. We just have to know that there's wisdom in the Bible, that there's love and support in being part of a church community, and that there is hope in God. We can be learners even as we teach, learning every day new ways to recognize and celebrate God's presence, new ways to communicate what we think and believe, new ways to align ourselves with God's purposes in the world. Our life experiences, our experiences with Jesus, give all of us something to tell, something to teach. The book of Proverbs encourages us to give freely from our storehouse of wisdom, to not withhold from the children the good gifts that we have to offer, to eagerly invite the youngsters and the young people to join us on our journey of faith. O God, Creator of all, whose Son Jesus Christ commanded us to love our enemies, lead them and lead us from prejudice to truth. Deliver them and deliver us from hatred, cruelty, and revenge. And in your good time, dear God, enable us all to stand reconciled before you. Through Christ we pray, and we join all of our voices in the prayer that Jesus taught us. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever.